You're listening to the Empowered Parent Podcast with Ryan and Kayla North, hosted by Chris Turner, a One Big Happy Home production. This podcast equips parents to empower their children and build healthy relationships throughout the home in order to see lasting change and thrive as a family. It's for families of all kinds, especially those who are parenting kids through adoption, foster care, kinship care, or in the process. The Empowered Parent Podcast is a developmentally informed, trauma-sensitive, connected parenting resource. To learn more, visit onebighappyhome.com.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Parent Podcast. Joining me, as always, are Ryan and Kayla North. Hey, guys.
Hey, Chris.
I don't know why I got almost 200 episodes in. That's still funny to me.
Why is that?
It makes me laugh every time.
Why is it funny?
I don't know. I literally just said, I don't know why it's funny.
Well, now I want to know why it's
And your
funny.
Good therapist response was, well, tell me why that's funny.
Tell me about that.
Let's unpack that.
Let's unpack
why you think that's funny, right?
I don't know. Maybe I just think you're funny.
Well, thank you very much. I try.
Everything you say makes me laugh.
How about everything?
You're right. About not everything about you say makes me laugh. Some of it makes me growl.
Could you demonstrate that growl for us?
No. Chris, what are you going to talk about? I ain't got time for this.
Nice pivot. So I thought we would talk about something that I know we, each of us, have struggled with, and that I'm quite certain pretty much anyone listening to us right now has struggled with. And that is that tiny, and if you haven't struggled with this, you're gonna.
Yeah.
So, and that's that tiny voice of doubt. The little tiny voice that sits there in the back of your brain and says, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. Mm. And gosh darn it, people don't like you.
Is that a quote?
Yeah, what's that from? That's from something.
Stuart Smiley from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, is that what that's from?
His positive affirmation. You're good enough.
You're smart enough.
And gosh darn it, people like you. Yeah.
So I don't know what Saturday Night Live is. I wasn't born in this country.
There we go. Oh. I was waiting for that lie to come in.
Or is it because I'm a middle child? I forget.
So what happens if your voice of doubt is like a raging lion? It's not a tiny one, right?
It doesn't whisper quietly.
It doesn't whisper quietly. Yeah. It's really big, yeah. Sometimes that's the case.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like you said, it's real for everybody. I think it's on a sliding scale of...
I was just thinking that exact phrase.
It's on a sliding scale between I show my doubts and I am vulnerable with them and I share them with others, or I keep them to myself and pretend like I don't have any doubts. I think that's the sliding scale.
Yep.
I'm not going to tell you where each of us are on that scale, but you could likely guess.
Well, and I think it depends on the season that you're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in a season where things are fairly easy, you probably don't hear that voice as often. Like you hear it every once in a while. You're like, oh man, I should have done that. Or man, I can't keep it all together, you know, but it's just like a day and then you're over it. But when you're in a season where everything seems really hard and behaviors are really big and everything seems to be falling apart,
that
voice can be like a lion that's just roaring at you all the time and just it never goes away.
Yeah, and I think that one of the ways that we get over or work through, probably a better way to say that, those nagging voices, the feelings of inadequacy, is to go upstream enough to figure out where those feelings come from.
Mm. Yeah.
Now that's what gets tough for people, right? Because most people don't want to do that.
Yep.
Because if you've read anything about attachment and understand anything about attachment, one of the hallmarks of a securely or attached person or somebody who's classified as insecure is to have a realistic view of their caregivers. Now, for a lot of people, that's tough to have a realistic mm-hmm. view of your parents because you think that there's some level of disloyalty. You think that they won't like it. You think that that it is the opposite of the biblical command to honor your parents. And I think that that's partly why a lot of people get stuck, particularly the people we usually work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? With some people who are typically Christians or have some connection to a Christian ministry.
Yeah.
Are the people we typically encounter, right? And so that's a really, really big medicine to take, is to say, look, if you want to get past these feelings of inadequacy that you have, if you want to get past the voice of doubt and quiet that voice of doubt, you're going to have to find the root of those doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of people, just check out of the game at
right.
that point, right?
For sure, for sure.
Well, because it's tough to be honest when you're being introspective, right? And I think that's what scares most people, is the realization that once they start down that path, you like you said, that's why people bail out, because eventually you get to a point where being honest is going to hurt.
Yep.
It may not hurt anybody else but you, but it's still going to hurt. And, you know, no one likes to hurt themselves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you think about, like, from a neurological perspective, the primary function of the brain is survival.
Yep.
And we typically talk about that in terms of physical survival. But I think your brain also protects you emotionally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's kind of why you lie to yourself, because you don't want to feel the emotional pain either. It's not just preventing physical pain.
And I wonder if that's a civilization thing. Like, you know, did our ancestors 1,000 years ago deal with the emotional, not to say they were not emotional. Obviously, we have history that goes back that far. We know they were very emotional.
Yes.
But I don't think they thought of it in the same way that we think of it now. Mm. Right?
I don't think you have to go that far back. I don't even think my mother's generation thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes we don't even realize we need to look at the past. Mm. Like when we get in those moments of doubt, when we're feeling like, oh my gosh, like I'm not a good enough mom. I'm not a good enough, you know, wife. I'm not a good enough, you know, person to care for my family, right? Like in general, when we have those big doubts, because we come at them from such an emotional standpoint, I think we don't always take the time to reflect on it and realize that we even need to reflect on it, right? I think until somebody says, hey, you know, when you have those doubts, figure out where they came from.
Yeah.
Most of us just, we ride the wave of emotion, and then the next day we're fine and we move on with life and we're not having those same doubts or whatever until the next time something happens. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps happening. And most of us just will get caught in that cycle over and over and over again because we don't even think to go back and process it, right?
Well, you don't think to go process it. I was thinking, yeah, maybe you don't think to process it because you don't realize you need to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's just so normal for you.
Yes.
That was the look on my face. It's like, because I don't think you realize that you need to. But
well, and especially if it's the same thing that you saw your parents do.
Right. I was about to say the exact same thing.
Yeah. They rode that emotional wave. It was like, oh, I'm just a terrible mom, or I'm just a horrible parent, or a terrible wife, or whatever. Maybe they even said those things out loud. Yeah. And you heard that growing up. And so then when you have those doubts, you're like, oh, everybody does. This is whatever.
You go with what you know.
Yeah. It just seems normal because that's what you saw, whether it be from your parents or whether it is this crowd of friends that you hang out with, right? You know, whatever it is, it feels normal. And so you just keep doing it and you never think to look back.
Yeah. It's not only you never think to look back, but I think the other thing we don't think about is the value in looking back. Is it doesn't only change the present, meaning that it allows you to better cope with the present. I don't think you've made any secret that you've been curious about why you react the way you do and stuff like that. And before we started recording, Chris said to Kayla, you know, I've seen you become less passive and more direct over the years that I've known you. And I thought, that just sounds like an offhand compliment, but I think that's a really... That sounds like an offhand statement, excuse me, but I think that's a really nice compliment.
It was meant as one.
To pay to somebody who's gone, now maybe I need to look and understand why I react the way I do. And I think that's an awfully nice thing to say, because what you said is, I noticed.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, but it's not just that it makes the present better, but it also mitigates your kids making similar mistakes in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because like you said, maybe you heard your mom say, I'm not good enough. Maybe you saw her acting that way, or your dad or somebody like that. Well, our kids watch by learning. And certainly if we say the things that we heard growing up, then they're going to start thinking about themselves in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are already thinking of themselves in that same way or worse, because the deficit situations are coming from.
Yeah, that's a great point. They're already starting this at something of an emotional deficit because the self view is already negative. And I think, you know, when you look from like sort of a psychological perspective, there are certain things that if they're not a certain way, they to me are like obvious red flags. Mm. Like one, a young person who doesn't think they're invincible. Like that's noticeable because I don't remember if you remember being a teenage boy or whatever, but I thought I would live forever, which is why getting older is so stressful, because now. When I eat food, it doesn't metabolize and leave nothing. Now it camps out around my waist.
Right.
You know, I used to get up and ride a bicycle at 5:30 in the morning, you know, 50 miles before school. Now we walk a mile in our neighborhood and I go to sit down. You know what I mean? But when I was 17, I never thought those things.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if you have a teenager that's got a really low view of themselves, that you should pay attention to that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And to your point, the kids are starting at this deficit because belief systems are damaged by the way they're treated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Example, if you love me, why didn't you feed me?
Yeah.
If you love me, why do you throw me into the wall? And so you start the question, it moves from a question to a belief that I must not be lovable.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, because that's really what it is, right? It's when you have this belief about yourself, when you have this doubt that's in your mind, it really, it's the belief that you have about yourself, right? When you say, I'm not sure if I'm good enough, what you're saying is, I'm not good enough.
Right. Yeah.
And you have this belief and it stems from something in your past. One of our kids was saying, you know, and this particular kid is very slim, very beautiful, and somebody, you know, 4 or 5 years ago said, oh, you're fat.
Mm-hmm.
And she never said anything to the rest of us about it. And so we weren't able to help her process and be like, you know what, that's sometimes kids say stuff like that. And I wonder where it came from and kind of help her say that, you know, that didn't feel good to you, right? Yeah. That wasn't a good feeling when somebody said that to you, and help her process, because she kind of kept it inside. And then recently it came out and was like, oh, that's why you have a low view of your body. And it came from one comment from one kid that likely, you know, was just an offhanded, you know, and may not have even been exactly what she heard. But, you know, we always hear things and we're going to interpret them in some way.
Yep.
And what was it I heard? I think it was Kurt Thompson, and he said kids are, they're keen observers and poor interpreters.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they,
I don't mean to argue with the great Kurt Thompson here, but I would remove the word kids.
Yeah.
I think human beings in general.
Yeah, but even
you know what? You know what it is? I think I know what he means. The observant part is tied to kids.
Yeah, like they
I don't think adults are very observant.
Yeah, because the kids they pay attention to these little things, but they interpret them and they twist it and they don't quite hear it the same way, and then they internalize it, and then it becomes a belief that they believe into adulthood. So when we as kids, we experience something, whether it was exactly how we remembered it or how we interpreted it, it was an experience that we internalized. It became a belief that we believed about ourselves, and then it manifests itself in our relationships with other people, whether it be our kids, our spouse, our friends, you know, coworkers, whatever. Mm. And if we don't do something about that underlying belief, then we will continue to react out of that belief system.
So with that, Kayla, how then do we deal with that voice of doubt?
Yeah.
Before you answer that, can I just tack something onto that?
Yeah.
Because you said we may not have interpreted it the way it was actually intended. We may not have remembered exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
And while those are two very, very accurate data points, they're also quite irrelevant. Right, because it's the way you remember it.
Right,
it's the impact that it had on you. It's how it changed how you viewed yourself. Mm. It's why for a lot of kids who have really demanding parents, they end up being adults who don't feel very good about themselves because nothing was good enough for their parents.
Yeah,
right. Whether their parents had the best of intentions in pushing them to do a little better, the way they interpreted it was, I'm not good enough because my parents, you know,
And so here's the disclaimer, though, that we probably should, you know, have Dallas do at the front end of the episode is that this isn't about blaming your parents. This is not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is part of that secure attachment, having a realistic view of your caregivers means that you see your mom and dad for who they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not this idealized view, because from a purely pure attachment perspective, an adult who only says, who says things like, my parent, fill in the blank, mom, dad, whatever, is amazing, is my hero. Like, to me, I don't go, oh my gosh, what a great relationship they have. To me, I'm like,
What did they not see?
We need to dig a little bit over
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what I think now. And so.
Well, and we've seen people that we know who had that view of caregivers and then began to unpack it and realized where it came from and saw some healing come from that. And I think that is, you know, when you can get to that place, to answer your question on how do we get to that place, you know, I was, you know, fortunate to be able to go through Cindy Lee's Making Sense of Your Worth curriculum about a year and a little more than a year ago. And it really was designed to answer that question. Like, how do you get to a place of secure attachment by making sense of the belief systems that you have? And part of it is just even recognizing where it came from. Like thinking about things that have happened in your life that inform, you know, and it doesn't have to be big things. It can just be, you know, the way I think about it is those things that, those stories that you remember that bother you from your childhood. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's got that story of that one kid, you know, I had a kid who called me fat when I was in middle school and I pushed him into a trash can and, you know, like I got in big trouble.
Passive, you say, Chris. She's throwing punks in trash cans.
It was the only time I ever got called into the principal's office and my parents got called. I was not really like an aggressive kid.
I'm so proud of you right now.
I am too.
I know. I told the kids that story the other day and they just started laughing. They're like, I had no idea. I was like, yeah, I got lunch detention once for stealing a French fry from somebody. He was a friend of mine, and we were joking around, but it was hysterical.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ruin
you haven't heard that
enthralling
one.
Story.
Yeah.
But you got detention for a French fry.
A French fry. Yeah, it was really ridiculous.
That's embarrassing.
It was embarrassing.
Whoever gave you that detention. Yeah, so after she tells the kids, I threw some punk in the trash can, she turns around, looks at me, she goes, "Baby, I'm a gangster too." I wish I could sing that song. But
it was like, you know, you think about that. I will never forget that moment because him saying that to me impacted how I viewed myself, you know, and until I was able to like get beyond that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to even always be your caregivers. It can be these kids in middle school that are mean, right?
No, that's good, right? Because when they talk about like adverse childhood experiences, they always talk about, did an adult in your house is kind of roughly how each question starts.
Yeah.
Right.
But and in TBR, they talk about, you know, big T and little T traumas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually morphed that a little bit, Chris, when we do presentations and workshops. We don't talk about big T and little T trauma. I say, look, if not everybody had trauma in terms of big T trauma, but everybody had drama. You know, anybody who has been to middle school has got to have some kind of adversity that they work through.
Yeah.
Right? It's because our kid is like, somebody told her that she was fat. That was not one of her parents who did that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so sometimes I think that's a really good ad, actually, because sometimes the work, there's always going to be some level of work you have to do in relationship with your parents. The reason for that is that your parents are not perfect.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's simply, right?
Well, and they're a big influence on your life.
They're a huge influence on your life. They're there for all the formative years. Before you go off to kindergarten or whatever, and you're around other people consistently, they're the most consistent presence in your life in those super, super impactful years. But even the best parents in the world
are not perfect.
Are not perfect. And so there's something that you have to kind of understand why. You know, this is my interpretation of attachment. You ready? The day you realize that the source of most of your inadequacies are your parents, and you're not mad about that, that's a sign you're making progress.
Mm.
A lot of people end up mad at their parents. And that's not the point of the work. That's why a lot of people don't do the work, right?
Yeah.
But what we found is that we actually understand them better now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually softened our view of them.
Yeah.
Which I think is the problem for a lot of people. If they can get beyond that anger, then you get to a point where, well, what do I do with this? Which I think, well, that's where a professional comes in.
Right.
Well, that's a good question. What do I do with this? Because I think people get stuck there.
Because I understand why I feel this way or why I act this way. It's because of X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And I can trace that back to my parents. Now I understand why they did it.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good step.
Okay. Okay, I can be mad about it as I process it, but okay, you know, like you were saying, Ryan, our parents aren't perfect. I will forgive them. I will move on. But now what do I do after that, right? Like, because I know for me, that wasn't the end point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I still struggle with that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, when you need, I mean, I love my therapist. You know, she's awesome at helping me see things that I can't see.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so you know, that, I guess that's my plug for seeking professional help to help you. Yeah. Once you get to that point, well, I mean, you probably need the professional help before you get to that point, but definitely by the time you get to that point.
Professional help will help you get to that point.
Right.
It can help you get to
if
that
point. If you're stuck,
yeah,
they're going to be the ones that can help you take that next step to kind of start minimizing that voice of doubt.
So, you know, Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson wrote those books, 12 Simple Rules and then 12 More Rules, I think. And so when I learned of these titles, and so I've read both of them, but when I learned of these titles before I even read them, I'm like, I want to write down 12 rules that I think, that I believe to be true and try very hard to live my life by. And one of the rules, I'm going to say two of them. One of the rules is the devil is real and he's a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to recognize that there's a spiritual component to that voice of doubt that you hear too, right? Because you've now chosen to invest in and mentor and help and raise and nurture and help them reach the potential children who have come from situations that we'll just say were less than optimal. We're not going to get into it. Everybody knows what I mean by that. They came from difficult situations. And so, but now you're investing in children. And so we know from the Bible that children are precious to Jesus. And he talks about how if you cause one of them to stumble, it'd be better if a millstone was tied around your neck and thrown in the depth of the sea. So now you're investing in something really, really important in God's economy. And so you will face spiritual adversity.
Yep.
And I think some of those lies you hear, it's not just your inadequacies from your child, from whatever, your history. I think those are amplified on a spiritual level in your life, very much so. Here's the other rule, which is actually the one I want to tell you about. Choose to spend time with people who don't mind saying no to you.
Yeah.
Because those are the people who will tell you, I think you're out of line, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you got some work to do. I think the way you talk about your mom and your childhood's weird to me. You need to look into that. Mm.
But they're also the ones that will tell you things that are true instead of leaning into the lies. You know, they're the ones that are going to tell you, no, you are a good mom, you know, and here's why. Or they're going to tell you, oh no, you're exactly the right person to help this kid in this situation. Like God has equipped you for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
They'll support you where you are, but they won't be happy leaving you there.
Right. They're going to do both. And then you talked about the lies, right? Yeah. And I think, so I was speaking at a mom's retreat back in February, and I said, you know, we're going to look at some lies that we believe about ourselves. And I gave them a list of lies from the Making Sense of Your Worth curriculum. And one of the moms said, but what if they're not lies?
Ooh.
And they're all lies. Mm-hmm. They're all lies. And I said, okay, what do you mean? And she goes, well, I really believe this to be true. And I said, yes, it's a belief that you have.
A belief is not the truth.
But it's not the truth. I said, is that belief rooted in God's word? And she went, no. And I said, then it's a lie. And she was like, I like the way you said that. She's like, because when you said stop, you know, you have to stop believing the lies. She's like, I don't believe that they're lies.
Mm-hmm.
She said, so I think the way I worded it was like, if the belief you have about yourself is not rooted in God's word, then it is a lie and you have to replace it with truth. And I think that's the other step that sometimes we miss.
Which is what we tell our kids all the time, right?
That's
especially
exactly.
When we're helping them with their beliefs about themselves.
Yes.
What do we know to be true? We talked about this with Will and Carrie Ann a few episodes ago. And so it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
We still think of doing that for ourselves.
That's exactly right.
We sure don't.
We
have no trouble taking our kids to therapy because of all the difficult circumstances that they've endured, but we don't think about getting ourselves the same level of help.
Agreed. Yes. Agreed, yeah.
Well, because we look at what our kids have been through and we think, I haven't been through that.
Mm-hmm.
So they need the help. I don't need the help. But
that's another lie you're believing, right?
It is.
There you go.
Because if I can get myself to a place of healthy, mature responses, that I can help my kids so much better.
Right, and so even to the point though, and I was thinking about saying this a second ago, so I'll say it now. It's not just you can help your kids better, because it thrills me that Chris said you're more direct than the woman I met. It thrills me because it's so pertinent to this conversation, and you didn't even know it at the time. It's not just that you can better help your kids, but you've never hidden. You speak about it. You went through the Making Sense of Your Worth that you did. You've been to a therapist and all of those kinds of things. And here's the great thing that as the result of that, not only has that contributed to a healthier marriage. You contributed a healthier marriage for us, yeah. A healthier environment in our home. You're able to be there for the kids more, but you can directly look at somebody across the table and you can say to that adult woman, that's a lie. You need to not believe it, because the Kayla you met years ago could not have said that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that would have felt too confrontational for you.
Oh, for sure. For right? sure.
Because
I wanted to please everybody.
Please everybody.
You were go yeah. along to get along.
Yep.
But exactly. Now you realize that, no, that's not helpful to that woman. Right. Somebody mm-hmm. needs to tell her. And I think that's the other thing, is it's not just good for you and good for the people who live in the house for you, mm-hmm. but you can actually now invest in other people in other ways, because you may have changed that woman's entire belief system about it, or at least changed the trajectory of her belief systems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That simple thing saying that's simply not true, it's a lie.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why you got to do it, because it's not just for your own benefit. Everybody around you benefits
mm-hmm. right.
from
and
it.
And society too. In general benefits when we all do the work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because we'll all respond differently to one another in the grocery store, you know, at the restaurant, wherever we are, we'll all respond better if we have a belief system about ourselves that doesn't cause us to be so reactive to yep. all the things that are happening.
Well, I think that's the first step. If you're wondering out there, how do I get over this voice of doubt? Realize what your beliefs are saying to you.
Yeah.
And which of those beliefs are actually lies and which ones are rooted in truth.
Yeah.
Well, as always, everyone, if you have any feedback for us, shoot us an email at podcast@onebighappyhome.com. And thanks for listening. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Empowered Parent Podcast. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss in the podcast, you can email us at podcast.onebighappyhome.com. Please like and share the podcast with your friends and family, and you can find us on your favorite social platforms by searching for One Big Happy Home. Thanks for listening.